Hi, I'm Francis Hellier, and welcome to my brand new podcast, Metaverse. This is a podcast for the future-minded, a series for anyone on the hunt for the next big thing and all its possibilities and implications. This is Tomorrow's World Today. With each episode, I will chat to those at the top of their fields, from futurists in crypto and space travel to forecasters in business and tech. Together, we will ask the question, what's next? Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Scott Cartoon, media entrepreneur, investor, and co-founder and chief executive of Technori. Founded nearly a decade ago, Technori is Chicago's largest and most diverse startup community, with a mission to raise startup funds around tech and investing. A long career in the investment space, before this, Scott was an investor in the leading equity crowdfunding platform, Republic, and co-founded the company Songfinch. He also spent 6 years as a talk show host on WGN Radio, as creator and host of Startup Showcase, the first ever radio show to feature companies the audience can invest in via crowdfunding equity. Scott, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to the Metaverse.
Thank you for having me. You've done your homework for sure. That sounds so much better coming out of your mouth.
I do my best. I have a fantastic team. It's their talent, not mine. So let's start at the beginning. I mean, if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, what got you in the investment space.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, it kind of like it starts, you know, really after undergraduate school, like graduating in 2006, and I got into kind of real estate because that's where the money seemed to be. All the people I knew who had a lot of money were in real estate. And I was like, oh, well, I want to have a lot of money, you know? And so ultimately I spent some time working in commercial real estate, managing properties, and kind of came to this realization that working around the money doesn't necessarily mean you get to have any of it. And so ownership is everything, and equity and stake in the game is everything. And obviously at the time I wasn't making enough money that I could like personally invest in real estate. And it was kind of frustrating. And I had like kind of friends and things that I could lean on to say, hey, can I like chip in, you know, I'm below the normal minimum, but if I could just participate, that'd be great. And it was a big pain in the ass. I don't know if you guys say that on the show, so I apologize if this is a curse-free show.
Feel free.
All right. Then I can take it. I can take that hat off. I'm good to go. All right. So at any rate, it was just a pain. It was really hard in the early 2000s to invest in. It was pretty much like a rich man's game or nothing. And if you were not super rich, then you just had to play in it and work for people. So I did that for a few years. I had some success managing properties and things like that. And I saw other people making tons of money. And so I went to grad school at Northwestern thinking, I'm going to come out of this either a lawyer or something, finance or something, in a position where essentially my objective was that I didn't have to rely on other people to close a deal. Like in the case of this, it was real estate. It took 5 minutes literally of walking into a class at Northwestern and be like, nope, this isn't for me. I think I want to find something totally new. And I ended up spending 2 years at Northwestern in grad school for two different degrees, both of them in kind of media and management. And I stumbled upon like a capstone project, which for us at Northwestern, it's just like to graduate kind of deal, your thesis, if you will. And it was a company called Big Frame, which was a startup based in Los Angeles that kind of repped one of the first influencers really in ever, like, you know, ever, like a monetized influencer as we would look at it today. And it was a YouTube channel called Mr. Guitar Man. And they were trying to bring Mr. Guitar Man global to South America. And in the South American region, like media is just a huge, media tech in particular is just a huge market. And so they're trying to go there. And my job was to look and work on how to bring this kind of American sensation to South America, which I don't know anything about, but I'm learning. And as part of my research, I went downtown Chicago, which is where I lived, and started poking around startup communities and saw that there wasn't really anything there, but there was this like 1871 kind of incubator filled with a couple of weird kids with t-shirts and raggy hair working on computers. And it just sort of clicked in my head. It was like, oh my God, startups is real estate in that they're all sort of these undercapitalized products. They're like really interesting ideas that could become gigantic and could be a huge investment, but they're undercapitalized and they need kind of polish and network and all this stuff. And I also kind of came to this realization while I was also at Northwestern that like media in particular is like the old guard is broken. It's not going to last for long, and whatever the big companies are doing. It's just about hanging on. There's going to be podcasts. There's going to be influencers. There's going to be people on social media that run entire content channels just through their page. And, you know, there's just a bunch of realizations that kind of hit me at once. And so I looked at it. I started talking to a bunch of founders, came to realize that great idea, not a whole lot in the way of financial know-how, not a lot in the way of raising money, not a lot of information in the way of like how to actually scale a business. Not that I did, but I had been around the infrastructure enough to kind of know that they didn't. And so I started, you know, poking around and came to this realization that there was an opportunity in Chicago, you know, to for the most part. This is like 2012. So Silicon Valley is established at this point, and Chicago is pretty far off the radar. And I looked and thought, I wonder if there's a way for me to get access and equity in these companies like I wanted to with real estate. But I don't have the money for real estate. But here, I could trade. I could work on companies without taking money and sort of work my way into equity and get that ownership stake I'd been looking for. So I dreamed up this concept that ultimately became Technori. Ironically, you said it in your intro. The first show that I created was called Tomorrow's Business Today. So like, this is actually kind of funny that it's the relative same concept, tomorrow's future kind of today. But at any rate, what ultimately became Technori was a podcast that I dreamt in my head, essentially to meet founders and to meet influential people. I figured the easiest way to meet them is to just bring them into your studio and record. And at the time, you know, no one really cared about podcasts, but I thought it was a cool medium that in my head, it reminded me of like where we are today. And you're having this success with Metaverse. It's like an audio book. That's very, very, it's almost like an audio book, but it's like one chapter and it's just super focused. And so I felt like podcast really was going to become a popular thing. And like the people who had the longest running show with the most notoriety and had kind of the context and insight, they were going to win the game.
I think it's brilliant, Scott. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, you were sort of leader in the field. I mean, you used podcasts to create something that was unique and were probably one of the first to do this. But what have you learned through that experience? Obviously, it's been successful. Many people are following Technori and have a stake in it or have a stake in your business and want to know exactly what you're doing. What have you achieved and what do you think the future holds for Technori?
So Technori has evolved. I guess let's start with this. As we evolve, the brands in particular, let's get on the conversation of Metaverse. Let's talk about the future. The future is a lot of solopreneurs, a lot of individual small group entrepreneurs. In the olden days, you'd call them a small business. Now we call them entrepreneurs because it sounds cool. But like there's a world where there's Francis who has maybe a day job, maybe not, but he also does a podcast and he may also do some investing. He may do a bunch of stuff. And you can build a brand. And in the Coca-Cola world and the Apple world, the brand is what people recognize and the people are less so. And they believe in this brand. But in the individual solopreneur world, you're the brand. You could call this show whatever you want. At the end of the day, they're going to be like, that's Francis's show. And your brand matters. And so what I learned through this and what Technori kind of has done and what I suspect Metaverse will do is it evolves as your interests evolve. And when I came into the Chicago tech scene in 2010, 11, 12, there's nothing there. There's like traders that are kind of angel investors, but that's it. There's no real form. There's some formal funds. Pritzker Group was pretty much it. There's just not a lot there. And the founders don't know where they're going. And the investors, quite honestly, don't know where they're going. They don't know where to find a deal. Anything could look like a good deal. People are just spitting pitch decks. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to formalize this. We don't have anything. We're going to put together a monthly event. I'm going to pick through 20, 50 companies and pick five. And I'll have a keynote that's relative to the topic of the five companies so that people can kind of understand what we're doing here. And I'm going to invite anyone who will show up. And it ultimately grew into, you know, 600 or 700 people every event at Chase Auditorium. And it was like, if you're an investor and you were looking for the best deals, you came here to see five companies that were legit and hear them all pitch at once. And you could ask them questions and you can move from there. That was what was needed in 2012. Fast forward to today. We have retail investors on Robinhood, cryptocurrencies through, well, I don't know. As of the time of recording this, it's going back up after Elon and the B word event. Who knows where it'll be by the time you publish this. But crypto makes liquidity available to anyone. There's sports cards, there's NFTs, there's all this crazy stuff. All of that is a result, in my opinion, of equity crowdfunding, which opened the door and said, anyone, rich or poor, preferably if you're poor, you shouldn't spend a ton of money on this, but if you have any available income, you should invest and spread it into some long shots. And it basically created an appetite. So fast forward to today with like a pit stop in 16, 17, 18, all the way to today, the evolution of how people spend and invest their money and the access to investment and what they look at, I evolved Technori from a stage event to a, you know, where companies were doing formal rounds and you had to be an accredited rich investor to do so, to a stage event where you could invest in companies via equity crowdfunding, to ultimately the podcast, to ultimately a WGN radio show, which is the first ever to let people invest from the audience. And, you know, $75 million is invested over this period of time in crowdfunding through our show, and hundreds of millions invested through traditional. And then we get to 21. And I really feel like if we could circle around this, and please feel free to share your experiences too in this from a creator standpoint, 2020 and COVID was a monumental shift, obviously for many reasons that, you know, we don't need to get into, but from the standpoint of people sitting at home and certain types of people, that time being incredibly valuable to learn and to digest information and to come up with creative ways to do things. You start to see, first it's Zoom. Everybody's on digital. You're talking to people all over the world. It doesn't matter where you are anymore. So your network just expands, you know, so big. And then you start seeing things like, obviously crypto, but then there's projects that are built on blockchain like NFTs, and people are digitizing every asset class. And there's laws that are now enabling individual people who are not accredited, and accredited meaning that they have, you know, several million dollars liquidity, or they make $250,000 over consecutive years or whatever the case. Now anyone can play ball and participate. And what you're seeing is Robinhood pops up. People are day trading. Their information and understanding of investing is going forward. And that fuels the demand for more creators to come into the game and to like bring new assets we've never thought of, like the NFTs we've talked about. But there's so much more. We get like music and everything is evolving. And so I evolve with it. Technori evolves with it. And, you know, I'm sure you will too.
If you think about the financial crisis, that gave birth to Bitcoin. I mean, you know, that was just almost a blip. Surely this is arguably the most transformational time of our lifetimes, given the pandemic, given the shift towards looking at things like crypto and blockchain and all these wonderful technologies that are out there right now. What do you think are the sort of trends? You've touched on NFTs, and of course, you know, we're all passionate and interested in crypto and blockchain and everything else. What are you seeing at Technori? What are the new projects that are really exciting? And how do you see this evolving as an ecosystem over the next few years?
You mentioned it in my intro, another company I'm involved with called Songfinch, which if people listening are familiar with Cameo, you know, Cameo and Songfinch actually launched on my Technori stage at one of the events I was talking about in July of 2017. And I remember Stephen to me is an absolute genius. He's one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And he came with a not so great pitch for what this idea of the future of autograph Cameo will be. And for those not aware, Cameo, there's not a lot of people who aren't aware, but for those that are not, Cameo is a platform where you can have celebrities give you a shout out video. And there's other stuff that they do, but that's the main thing. And he gave not such a great pitch. And I think he would admit that. But I knew it immediately. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God, personalization, close connection. Social media lets you feel connected to whoever you like, whether it's a family member, a friend, or a celebrity. This actually lets you engage with them. And they, you say something to them and they suddenly say something back to you. Whereas on Twitter, very rarely do they actually, you know, engage back with you. And so in my head, I was like, this is a no-brainer evolution. So Songfinch, which pitched right before them, was a similar concept, only it was personalized music. And I ultimately acquired a stake in that company. And now we've had a lot of success. We just raised a big seed round with very well-known investors, from The Weeknd, who's a famous artist, to the CEO of Atlantic Records, and on and on, to offer personalized music from musicians. And the only reason I tell you this is it kind of sets up an answer for your question, which is when you look at Web 1.0, which is just going online, that's, you know, Bill Gates on David Letterman saying this whole internet thing is a thing. And that is having people have the ability to tap into a single network. That's all it was. Build on it, do what you want, put your storefront on it, whatever. Web 2.0, Facebook and all those things clearly have a huge part of this, and Twitter in particular. But the real mover was Amazon, because what Amazon did from a physical product standpoint and what Twitter and Facebook did from a digital product standpoint was create massive immediacy. The expectation of every person on it is to get the news immediately, to get it, even if it's wrong, to get it fast and fast and fast and be connected within milliseconds. And Amazon fostered this. You can buy anything you want from wherever you are at any time. There's no hours. And oh, by the way, we're going to get it to you by tomorrow. And now we're dropping it in drones today. And you set this tone. We're going forward, which is also plays into this crypto. One of the reasons that it's so popular among young people is that for those young people who spent their time playing video games, they were already living in a digital currency world. They were already buying and trading credits for games. And so this was logical to them. Also logical is it doesn't have trading windows. It's 24/7. Nothing stops it. And the attention span of people of the generation grown up in Web 2.0 is that they have no attention span. And so what this does is it tees up Web 3.0. Web 3 is where we are just touching now, and we're in the infancy of it. It's like when Facebook went live in 04. That's where we are in Web 3. And what it's about is I get everything I want when I want it, but I want it now how I want it. I want it personalized. I want it about me. And you're seeing it with, this is why I say Stephen Galanis, the CEO of Cameo, is an absolute genius. He saw that and he jumped on it. And so now not only can you get a Cameo in 48 hours and you can order it anytime, you can get it from who you want and they'll say what you want. And from Songfinch's perspective, you can actually have him, like I can listen to a musician, I can listen to their songs, but wouldn't it be cooler if they sang a song about me? Like do it for me? And it creates this ability to get on demand and have it custom your way. And I think what you're going to start to see as we transition is whether you're looking from a B2C perspective, like we're talking about now, or a B2B perspective, when you talk about CRMs and companies like Zoom and Salesforce and Apollo and all these other startups that are in the space building tools for business, they're building tools that allow you to customize messaging, customize sales pitches, reach out to any person in the world at any time and deliver the message how and why you want it, how they expect it. Just like consumers, we can get everything immediately and customized. And you're going to start to see that as the base platform. So blockchain and all of these tools you're seeing are having projects built on them, like NFTs. Musicians are publishing direct, like Chance the Rapper and Taylor Swift. Movies are being published direct. They're being put on digital and streamed instead of going to theaters. Like just the whole world in all of the tech for the next decade is going to be focused on driving the experiences you want, how you want them immediately.
So are you going to put a good word into the weekend for me to create a song on Songfinch and a theme tune for Metaverse podcast? That's what I'm looking for. No,
we can definitely help you on the theme song. Getting the weekend on, it's definitely in the roadmap to get the like high level artists on right now. We're focused on more of the working professional musicians who are not quite as big as him, but I would certainly be happy to help you either way.
I think what you guys are doing there is fantastic, and I completely agree with you. When you describe Cameo, for example, as a project, you think, well, this seems so obvious that it can't possibly work, and yet you know that's a perfect example of where the simplest ideas really work and take off spectacularly. Let's go back to sort of entrepreneurship, and you through Technori, you know, meet and talk with many young entrepreneurs. What sort of advice would you give a sort of young person starting out with an idea to start a new business, and how would you help guide them to make their choice of success?
That's a great question. It's funny. I would give a different answer today than I would have given a week before COVID kind of hit the States, just because the world has opened up so much. The old answer was surround yourself with good people that, you know, obviously you want to build a strong team if it's a company that's going to need to scale. If it's just you, it's a little slightly different. But you're trying to surround yourself with people who've done it before, who have access to a network that's important and can help you kind of build an MVP that is functional and people can understand, and you're going to be able to find product market fit, and then you can kind of build your company and start raising money and whatever the case. Today, I think the only thing that you can do wrong is to move slowly. I think you have to be like, I have a theory that this concept, whatever it may be, has demand in the world and people will want this. And you obviously need to hire a good team if that's your case. And you certainly need to network, but you don't need to go the old route of like meeting people brick and mortar style. Like, you can go on Twitter, find a community of people who are talking about the topic or the product industry, whatever it is that you're involved in, get super engaged, learn from them, make contacts, tell people what you're doing, make it public, be obvious. You're not hiding anything. Anyone can build whatever they want today. It's very hard to protect. It's execution is your only real moat. So my suggestion to everyone is, if you have an idea, get it out there quickly and find people who are going to be helpful and put the product out into the market as soon as you can. When you have any sort of feedback, make those little changes to improve it, raise money as you go, crowdfunding or otherwise, to sort of support not really growth, but just proving your theory, and then focus on customer and like acquisition. What does it cost to get it? How do you get these people to love your product? How do you get them to advocate for your product? And once there's enough interest from the customer standpoint that you can actually go out and raise money because you can prove that there's something there, then go through the process of doing all that. The old days, it was like raise money first and like slowly build this thing. Now it's like as fast as you can, get it out there and see what happens.
So Scott, what about FOMO, fear of missing out? There's lots more and more people that get involved in the startup space, realizing that they need to jump on board with things like Bitcoin and blockchain, et cetera. So do you find you have more and more people wanting to invest than you did previously?
Yeah, 100%. This is going to be an interesting sort of subplot in the future conversation. Prices and investment rounds are getting richer and richer. And this like tech bubble conversation in my mind is getting bigger and bigger. And part of the reason is it started off as a good thing. And now it's TBD because so many operators and founders have access to some money and network now based on, you know, popularity or whatever the case, they're all building these things called rolling funds, which are sort of like fellow founders investing into this sort of fund that puts 10,000 at a time into companies. And that, along with crowdfunding and first look funds and traditional investing, make it really easy to find, not necessarily easy to get the money. You still have to have a good product and all that to get it, but easy to find the money. And so I think you're going to start to see, like, pretty much in my opinion, if you really, really want to build something, there's almost no excuse for not being able to raise the couple $100,000 or whatever it might be to get the MVP off the ground. It's very hard to excuse a founder who's like, I just couldn't raise enough money to do it at this current juncture.
So Scott, here at Metaverse, we're looking forward to the future, everything to do with future tech, future concepts, where we're going to be in the next 10 years. What are the projects that you've been exposed to or involved with do you think are really the next big things?
Well, we talked about obviously NFTs and things like that. I think building experiences, whether that's art, collectible, investing, or just literally like listening to music, interacting, really anything you used to do in person in real life, we are going to see them exist in a digital format. Even real estate now has like digital meta, you know, like metaverse. There's literally a metaverse out there of people buying digital real estate that today is extremely expensive and for whatever reason popular, and then it'll disappear and be worthless, and then it'll come back and it will settle out as some, you know, certain things will be valuable and certain won't. Everything is about bringing it to a digital experience and adding a price to it and then a mechanism for people to either buy it, own it, sell it, or invest in it. So that's a huge part. The other thing we talked about briefly was sort of the solo entrepreneur and people running side businesses and just having a diverse income. Because of that, there's a ton of tools that are being built. And one that kind of comes to mind is, you know, there's a company called Apollo, which I invested in a small amount of money and it wasn't a big deal, but they are growing rapidly. And what they do is they basically create a very simple to use platform and CRM that anyone like you or I could have. And we could access data from these gigantic companies like Zoom Info, and we could use LinkedIn, and we can use all these tools to essentially automate our marketing and our sales and connect with anyone at any time. And you're going to start to see tools like this for everything, you know, marketing suite of marketing tools that allow you to create videos and, you know, imagery and advertising things and all that, that are just like used to take a team and with thousands of dollars and now a $300 a month subscription. And you've got access to building digital creative content that literally used to take weeks and you could do it instantly on your phone. Everything is being built to curate whatever experience you want, whether it's selling or for joy. And I think you're going to see this like for the next 10 years, the focus on kind of consumerism and like how we interact and exchange goods and services with one another be a big part. And then obviously from there, there becomes other areas like telemedicine and people being interested in getting, you know, their prescriptions and things sent directly to their house and filled online and not having to go through this like wait in line at Walgreens, and Walgreens is going to be involved in it and doing a video call with your doctor, assuming you don't have like an emergency, to just do checkups and being able to test your health on your watch and phone and monitor your blood work and all this stuff. It is just going to keep evolving, and you're going to see the same thing with like even cars and energy. People are going to get more towards, you know, my car is a battery operated vehicle, and on top of it, it's in a garage with a roof that's solar panel, which powers my house. So now I'm off the grid and I'm like self-powering, and there's green food, and just everything is going to be like facing towards us as people being individually able to do whatever we want.
I think that's right. Tell me about diversity, Scott. That's obviously important to you. And I know Tech Nori has sort of championed diversity, female founders, and the importance of founders from all backgrounds. How important is that? And where's the opportunity within that?
Well, there's opportunity everywhere. You know, money has been a bottleneck for people. Ideas is never a bottleneck. I've never understood people, teams, groups, companies, governments, anyone who doesn't value diversity of thought. Like, I don't know what room, if you were to take, you know, whether it's a government or a company, if you took a room of people and said, we're all going to take only the 12 white guys from the same suburb and ask them a question, they're all going to give you the same answer. So like, if it's the wrong answer, you're going to be in trouble, versus a room that's going to have 10 to 12 people of different backgrounds. They're going to give you a far more well-rounded answer. I don't understand people who don't believe in taking a diverse response versus a singular response. It doesn't make sense to me. So from that perspective, I don't think we've done a very good job, quite frankly, of including people from different backgrounds into tech and other things. We solve a lot of problems that solve the problem of like the old rich white guy and nobody else. And you know, I think that's going to change. I think another part of this that is probably one of the biggest reasons why money didn't circulate to diverse groups is they don't understand the problems. If you didn't grow up in the inner city, or you didn't grow up, you know, a woman or whatever the case, you don't understand the market. You don't understand the opportunity. And so you pass on it because you don't know it. And so I think there's tremendous opportunity. We talked about at the beginning of this, you know, I was on the project trying to bring Mr. Guitar Man to South America, like doing research and finding out the way that South Americans interact with digital media. You know, this is almost more than 10 years ago. It was well advanced of what we were doing in the States. And if you look at China and Japan, their adoption is obviously very different from ours as well. I think you're going to see different pockets of the world that previously were sort of ignored now being huge. Growth potential. You've got to tap everything if you want to keep growing at a crazy pace. And the last thing I would add is ultimately, if you look at the global economic gap, the rich and the poor gap is widening every day. And so unless you want to have, and obviously this is not a political podcast, so I'll avoid the connotations here, but if you want to have a society where you're supporting groups of people financially, because like welfare or whatever the case you're using to try to support them, it will not work. At some point, you're going to run out of money and the people are going to be larger than the available resources, and it becomes a problem. You need to give everyone the ability to monetize and live their existence in the best possible way they can. And I think that tech and entrepreneurship is a great way to do that. I think you can actually have people who come from a meager background do incredibly successful things, and then they reinvest in their own community because they know their community. So I think that the fastest way to solve this economic gap we live in is actually entrepreneurship. It's giving tools to people from everywhere and giving them a shot and investing in them. That's just my personal thought.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, all credit to you, Scott, for the wonderful work you've been doing at Technori and for your enthusiasm and passion for startups. I think it's fantastic. So what's the future hold for you?
You know what? I wish I knew. I like to think I live in like 9 month and 18 month increments. Right now, Technori is, you know, Technori is always the background. Like I'm always doing the show weekly and talking to new people and getting exposed to new things. I usually pick kind of a project or two that I'll do like per year, per 18 months. So right now, Songfinch is a big priority for me. And it'll probably be that way for another 12 to 18 months. And then, you know, whatever comes up next will be another project. I'll always do Technori, I feel like, or some iteration of it, but the world's changing so fast. It's hard to, for a person like me, at least, it's hard to be like, oh, I'm going to do this for a long time. Like if I can do this for a year, I'm happy.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Scott. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Of course, Francis. Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Metaverse with me, Francis Hellier. Thank you to my guest, Scott Cotoon, for a fascinating conversation. Tweet us at MetaversePod with any suggestions or feedback. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please share a link on social media. You can sign up to receive an email when a new episode drops at our website, metaverse.com.
Well, wasn't that amazing? It was created and produced by podcast partners. They're really lovely people and rather good at all this podcasting guff. Find out more at podcastpartners.com.